And I am your other host, Victoria Malle.
And I am really excited to introduce to you Helly Kennedy.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, we're so happy to have you here, Helly.
Thank you for having me on.
Of course.
Well, thanks so much. I'm excited to chat with you.
Awesome. So we always like to start our interviews, especially with someone new to us, by asking them, what do you fangirl over?
I'm a big fantasy nerd.
Love it.
So pretty much almost anything Tolkien, I will nerd out over. I'm also a fan of Dark Crystal, which recently came out with a TV series on Netflix, which I was really pumped in the summer to watch. And one of my friends, Richard Elliott, wrote on the show. So I was like even more excited because I'd go to work and I get to pick his brain and poke him and bug him about what happened, like in terms of the storyline, and try to get spoilers. But he was really good at being tight-lipped. So I get to fangirl over that, like at work with him. Mainly like fantasy stuff, a lot of fantasy. I like sci-fi too, but like as a kid, I grew up reading The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, and a lot of Robin McKinley stuff.
That's awesome. I feel like those are usually such rich, complex worlds. That'll take up all of your fangirling energy because they're so deep, those types of fantasy universes.
I totally agree. Thing about Tolkien growing up was there weren't a lot of female characters that were prominent in the books, like in Lord of the Rings or in The Hobbit. So my best friend and I, Stephanie, we took what Tolkien had laid as a foundation and we created other female characters, and we would like make storylines about them and act out storylines with our sisters who we, you know, kind of forced to participate in these epic cosplay things we would do in private. It was like acting out almost like a play we had written. I think like I really liked that world and whatnot, but I think you're right. It consumes a lot of time because there's so much to play with, but also because there was a lack of female characters in the main storylines, we were even more entrenched in it by building new ones. So that was kind of what made us interested in it. We got to build stories based off a really rich world.
Well, it's no surprise that now you're a writer.
I guess it kind of makes sense. Super exciting to have so many strong, interesting, and very grounded, genuine female characters. And Tat did an amazing job at portraying them as just, you know, taking an outlandish situation and very interesting people and making them feel so real and just, they're just human beings, right? You know, we're portraying people in their own journeys, so.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I'm a fan of Orphan Black. I was a fan of Orphan Black too before I started working with the property, with the with the universe. So, I was crazy about Felix. So funny, such a cool character. Helena, I loved them a lot. And so when I was looking at, you know, either I did three comic book series with them. One of them was like kind of a backstory that was Helsinki, and another one was an alternate universe deviations. I took like the premise of the series and started it from the beginning and kept Beth Childs alive, which is a minor spoiler, but I mean, that event happens. Yeah. So, I mean, like watch like 5 minutes and you'll see what I'm talking about. But yeah, I think like when I was looking at that, especially with writing an alternate universe comic book series, I had to constantly think about, okay, like what makes the show, what attracts me to the show? And why do I keep watching? What's entertaining about it? And where have these characters been? And where can I take them that keeps that integrity of who they are, but also like, you know, carries through with the tonal, the tone that the show has set. So I thought a lot about that as both a fan, but then also critically, just as a writer, in terms of structurally and building it, right? So for me, it's kind of easy to switch into writing gear because you end up just sort of it's a job, right? And it becomes something. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of layering and building. But it certainly helps to love the material you're working on, you know. So this is like a job, but mm-hmm. it's kind of like a privilege to have written for the universe. So, yeah, it's a hard question to give like a solid answer to. I feel like I'm meandering through it.
We love talking about process here. That's one of our favorite things to discuss. So I think we're just here to have a discussion and explore. We're just so excited to have someone on who has been able to put their mark on so many different aspects of the Orphan Black fandom and franchise. So I was really curious if, and Kristen as well, if there was a difference in your process when you're translating across mediums. Did you approach the stories differently when you were writing the comics versus when now you're on the team for the next chapter?
Oh yeah, totally. It's a totally different beast to write mm-hmm. for prose. I'd say when I was writing comics, it was both like writing for TV or film with all the money in the world and also no money. Because when you write in the screenwriting format, you think a lot about budget because you have to. You've got to pay people. You have to get locations. It's an expensive art form. When I was thinking about the comics, I could pretty much set the story anywhere. I could go anywhere in the world. I could have like as many explosions and crazy murders and weird things that I wanted, but I only had 20 pages and mm-hmm. I needed to economize on how many panels I'd use. So I was thinking in shots. So I would mm-hmm. really think like a screenwriter and a director to that degree. And then I would work with my comic book artists and they would help me to refine what I'd written. And they'd come up with things that either improved what I had done or played off of what I'd done. So it's totally different because in prose, I would say I approached it from more of an internal emotional standpoint. Mm-hmm. Prose, a good book needs plot that keeps moving, right? You can't have stagnation, but you can have like good stretches of time where you get to explore inner arcs that you can't show in a visual medium as clearly without an insane amount of voiceover or like, you know, narration panels like in a comic book, which starts to get weird in those two mediums. But in prose, I like somebody's on an emotional tangent. I could really jump inside of a character. And I have an acting background. So for me, it was so fun to start to break down, well, okay, this character is in a situation where they've just realized they're a clone and they're faced with this life-threatening, without spoiling the next chapter for anybody, life-threatening danger. And they're going through changes. Like, what does that mean to somebody of this background? So I got to kind of embody it a little bit more and then let out what you normally maybe you do internally or you put down as a writer on the page, but mm-hmm. and then never show anybody if you're screenwriting. Here we get to actually do it and groom it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's super satisfying. I would say it was super enriching for the story. Orphan Black is a really hard universe to write for. It's thematically complex. The characters are complex. It makes really interesting, clever statements about humanity and, you know, technological progression and just what it means. Even like you could say to be a woman in the world, but what it means to be an individual in the world and identity. It's very complex that way. And there's 5 seasons of TV that have already gone through so many different situations and scenarios with these amazing characters that you really have to dig deep to figure out, like, okay, what can we do next that we haven't seen yet? So what was really nice was our room was pretty well-rounded. We did have one male writer, Eugene Myers, E.C. Myers, and everybody had kind of a really interesting, different background. I came from kind of a screenwriting, I'm primarily like screenwriting and publishing in terms of comic books background, with a lot of knowledge about Orphan Black. And then Malka Older, who was our showrunner, essentially, she's a doctorate in ethics, and she's like particularly to scientific, like in the science realm. And then we had Madeline Ashby, who was a futurist, and that's also like some hard sci-fi. So she came at us with a bunch of terrifying things that could happen. she was extremely helpful. She really brought that element. That's a very Orphan Black thing. And she lives in Toronto, where I live. We both kind of know the city and the environment that they're working in a lot. So we could play off of that tone, because I think the city has informed the tone of the show a lot. And then we had also Michelle Baker, who has very interesting, emotionally deep characters. She's primarily writes in fantasy. I think she does urban fantasy, but she comes at characters with really crystallized, clear perspectives. So that was really cool. And then we had Lindsay Smith, who has a background in, I think, computer programming and possibly hacking. I don't know what I'm allowed to say. I don't know. She's got a very unique background, and she's a novelist as well. So, and she's super talented. So she brought a lot of a technology aspect to it, like technological side. We play a lot on that too with mm-hmm. computer science. We talk about a little bit. So
it's like a lot of these themes that you see in Orphan Black. It's like you have the experts who know it.
Exactly. So like hats off to Cereal Box for like, you know, putting together a room like that, because I think that's the type of thing to hold a story together for this property. You need mm-hmm. to have a varied room. And the writing room on Orphan Black was also like, had a lot of interesting, diverse writers who had a lot of like, background. So
yeah, specialized.
They all came from different like paths of writing and brought something mm-hmm. different usually. So, and this room was really cool too, because it was like,
I would be so intimidated.
It was a little intimidating, I have to admit, when I went there. I sold in New York and we met and did a writing room, except for Madeline, who couldn't make it, and she ended up Skyping in like clone call style. Like, it was intimidating, I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh my God, why am I here with these people? They're so fun, insane awards and stuff, and they're really, really talented novelists. Mm-hmm. But I think in the end, we all learn from each other. I learned so much working with them. And they said that they learned from everybody on the team. And I don't think that this could have been written without a team. Or if it was like one person writing it, it would take years.
Yeah, it would just be a lot. Well, that's fantastic. Because so often, because I work in the entertainment industry, so often you hear stories where that's the opposite, where it's just so quote unquote difficult to put together a diverse representative team of writers, of storytellers. But for a minute, we wanted to jump back to your Orphan Black Deviations comic series, which is such an interesting look at the what-if timeline that we mentioned. If Beth had lived and not killed herself. Again, sorry, small spoiler. So what was it like? Because I loved your anecdote about how you would write your own storylines with kind of within the Tolkien canon. And I think some people could maybe call that like an AU, an alternate universe. So what was it like being able to explore sort of an official kind of franchise approved AU in the comics? I'm using a lot of air quotes because it's like a very kind of fluid thing, but it's interesting because it, to us, it felt like something that we would see in fandom a lot, but to have it codified by the show's studios and creators was fascinating.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I really did feel like I was writing fanfic.
Yeah, like there's nothing.
Yeah, I'd be writing and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, I'm essentially just writing fan fiction right now. And it's a job. I'm like, that's pretty awesome, right?
It's amazing. Yeah.
So that was really nice. I think opposed to me going off and like writing in my bedroom on my laptop and like maybe putting it out online, like hiding it somewhere online and not having like any eyes down on me, it was a little bit more pressure, I would say, because I mean, I had to reinvent the wheel, which, you know, was a pretty good wheel. I don't know. That doesn't really make sense. Yeah.
Strong wheel.
Strong. It was a strong wheel, a hardy wheel, right? And so I had to reinvent it. And I was getting notes from, you know, about like 3 to 4 different sources. It's almost like it felt kind of like getting network notes or whatever when you're writing for TV. So I think it was really interesting. It was really challenging because I was also writing it alone. Whereas collaborating with all the writers on the next chapter, I could, you know, lean on people and, you know, we would all Slack chat to each other like mad, over the year that we wrote it. I would say that writing that series was both a pleasure and scary at the same time, because Orphan Black's fan base is very strong and very intelligent, very vocal, and you know, they're people you respect a lot. And so it was kind of like I'm delivering them their fanfic that may not be up to their standards. So it was a little bit intense, but I just had fun with it too, because the characters are fun. And they're so cool to work with that ultimately it's pretty much a pleasure to write for these characters always.
I had like binge read the entire
Oh, thank you. Make what you would like to see. If you like sci-fi, fantasy, whatever you like to consume and you gravitate towards the most, go for that. And when you end up getting jobs, you adapt and you write for other properties, and you have to kind of like push your natural inclinations or skill set to fulfill another property's like tonal needs or whatever. But in the beginning, I think like I started writing and making stuff that spoke to me, because I started making indie films in high school, and having them go through festival circuits. And then we have a granting system up in Canada for artists. So I was getting some grant money from the government to keep making films, like from arts councils. Yeah. Like I would hand in packages and I'd get little pots of cash to make these things. I just kept trying to like, you know, pick up on like what I liked to consume and also what was within my capability of making, but also talk about things that were important to me, you know, and try to weave that into my medium and into the genre that I chose or the kind of core story concept that I would come up with. I think like when you can make it super personal and you're really in your own voice, that's when people shine. And I've had friends who have like, you know, had writing careers and they've been like hired to write sequels for movies and whatever. And it was fine, but nobody really knew who they were as writers until they wrote that project that was the most personal to them. And that's when their careers took off. And that's when they started getting like a bunch of gigs or had a little bit more, I don't know, cachet, you know, like to their work. So wow. Yeah, just write what you, and like, keep making stuff, like just keep making stuff like it and show your stuff. Don't hide it, because it's like, it's so hard as a writer sometimes to show people things because it's terrifying.
It's like getting naked.
It's like getting naked.
It is.
First time in front of somebody and you're like, oh God, here I go. This is like, I'm sweating. I don't feel well. I feel nauseous.
Exactly.
It's a lot of self-judgment, but usually that other person's not seeing like the 7,000 things you're thinking about that's wrong with yourself or your work. Right?
Right.
But yeah, showing work has been good. And like, I went to a number of programs for writing and directing. And I, you know, I got used to taking notes and getting grilled on my stuff and getting called on my bullshit, right? You know, and so you'll be afraid of it. I can't say don't be afraid of it, because you will be, because I was terrified. But I just kind of like...
You got in your reps in a way.
Yeah, you breathe and you take it in stride, and you adapt to like getting feedback and stuff. Mm-hmm.
So, oh my God, such great advice. And you've also to get back to writing and you know, this balance of writing for someone else's tone in a way and your own, you've been able to write for the Clone Club that everyone knows and loves, but also new characters like Vivi in the next chapter. Do you have any favorites in terms of who you enjoy writing the most?
Oh, I do love writing for some of the classic characters. Like, I didn't get to write too much Helena, but I love Helena, because I feel like I'm her most days. Like, just tromping around and, like, putting on a big coat because it's like Canada and it's cold, and just being kind of, I don't know, antisocial sometimes. So I love writing for her. Allison is really fun to write for. She's really hard to write for because I think she can come off gimmicky. Mm-hmm. I really love writing for her. And I liked writing for Vivi actually too, because that was something that we took a lot of time to figure out, that character, and get her backstory and her voice down. And she became quite complex the more and more we dug into her throughout the process of putting together the 10 episodes. So she ended up becoming someone who I was like, yeah, I can relate to you. You know, you're someone who's like pursued your career for your whole life. And I'm not going to like spoil what her career is and everything, because I'll ruin it. You pursued your career. You sacrificed so many things to get where you were. And like, you know, it's probably partially being a woman in a male dominated industry, because she is in one. And then it all blows up in a split second. And it was kind of a really interesting moment to look at somebody who had fought so hard and sacrificed a lot of traditional paths for a woman to have a very specialized career. So I thought that was super relatable and interesting to write for.
The next chapter's next chapter.
If you could adapt another TV series that had ended the way that Orphan Black had ended its run, if you could adapt another series for something like Cereal Box, what would you choose?
Okay, I thought about this, and I have like a few answers, but they're all very different.
Even better.
Cool. The show is not over, and it's more of an anthology, but I'm a huge Black Mirror fan.
Ooh, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, because I think like they do some really interesting stuff with Black Mirror and touch on some really ugly parts of humanity and technology combined. And, you know, I think that's really and some really like interesting heartfelt things, too. I think if anyone at Cereal Box is listening, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, no, and I feel like that would actually, because Cereal Box is such an interesting, really smart, cutting edge platform. So I think that kind of material would translate quite well there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think it would be really neat to hear it, because the dramatization with the like almost radio play sound effects laid into the tracks it would be so amazing for something like Black Mirror, which has a like really strong ambience to it.
Yep.
And then I also thought I would like to write for Dark Crystal. It's not over.
Yeah.
So cool. I just love it. I love Jim Henson worlds. That's my favorite of all his films. So that would be cool. And then my other kind of like going like left here, like just veering in another direction, is I love the show. I don't know if anyone has seen Happy Valley.
No.
It's a show in the UK. Yeah, about a female police chief in a small town whose daughter commits suicide after she's raped. It's about her journey, holding together her career, living with her sister after the death of her child in a small town. And she ends up getting faced with who she thinks may have been the culprit who caused her daughter's suicide. The acting is amazing. The writing is amazing. The show is great. And I think that it ended in season 2, unfortunately, like broke my heart when it ended. I think there was talks for another season, but I'm not sure what's going on. But if that doesn't happen, I think it would be brilliant as a Cereal Box book series, because I think the acting is phenomenal, and having the audio aspect of it would really showcase that. And the character is just so amazing to follow and see. She's such a, yeah, it's amazing. So go see it.
Yeah. For sure. Thank you for all of your very thoughtful answers, even on the fun questions. So we're transitioning now into the part of the podcast where we play our fandom Would You Rather game. So we're asking a slightly different type of question, so buckle up. just kidding. Would you rather have your favorite TV show be canceled at its peak or have it drag on for too many seasons?
That's so hard. If I really love something, though, probably cancel it at its peak so I can remember it. You know, in a favorable light before it just drags on and I become, you know, kind of hypercritical about what the writing has done or what they haven't done. I think, like, yeah, cancel at the peak. Just, like, put out a killer story.
Right.
That's hard.
That's why they're fun.
probably like in the universe then. So I can just like binge it like some crazy consumer of media. Because five years is a long time to wait. I think I'd lose track. And then I'd be in my like 70s by the time some of it came out. And then I'd be like, oh my God. Right?
Geriatric fangirling.
Yeah.
Would you rather see a musical episode of your favorite TV show or a crossover episode with two of your favorite TV shows?
Crossover.
What would they be?
Oh my God, I don't know.
Sorry. Orphan Black and?
Orphan Black and, I don't know. I don't know if I have a good answer for this. No, I would totally like a crossover. I think like I've seen a lot of musical episodes and I love musicals. But as a kid, I collected movie memorabilia, and I was really into the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And so for that reason, I'm very kind of, I guess I'm anal retentive about musicals because I'd seen so many of them, and I have such a specific taste for what I want to see that sometimes when they do musical episodes on TV shows I'm watching, I don't always love them because I'm so groomed to like a certain type of musical. I guess I did it to myself. But yeah, I think crossovers are cool. I like seeing characters. I love it when universes can, you know, bring in other characters or elements or parts of the world from another, like kind of like another fandom, but also like, it has some sort of tenuous connection. Like even Orphan Black did it with Ginger Snaps, the movie. Like Bailey Downs is the suburb that Allison Hendricks lives in. And it's also the suburb that these two teenage girls who are in this werewolf movie, Ginger Snaps, who was directed, it was directed by John Fawcett, one of the co-creators, and written by Karen Walton, one of the writers on Orphan Black. And they brought that stuff in. Like, so I love those kind of Easter eggs that you can find. Mm-hmm. And when people show up, I love that connectivity. We do it in video games all the time too. So it's like, I'm all about it.
Awesome.
I'm the type of person that won't even watch movie trailers before they go to the movies because they want to know almost nothing about them. But I really would want to see, it will kill me if I can never see the end of a movie. I think it would kill me. So I guess I'd take the spoilers, even though I love going in as like a blank a slate as I can for that experience. Just, you know, I guess I'd take the spoilers.
Because part of it is in the execution, right? So
true.
Would you rather be zapped into the world of your favorite comic series or your favorite video game?
Probably video game. Mm-hmm. I really liked Skyrim when it was out, and it's also a fantasy setting that I spent most of my childhood pretending existed and that I lived in.
So you could like manifest that?
Yeah. Yeah. And if there was a really good, like the Middle Earth games, like the games set in Middle Earth that have come out in the Tolkien kind of universe haven't been like, they're always full of war and sadness and aggression. But if there was like a nice peaceful version where I could like go into that game and go to the Shire and live there, I would probably go to Middle Earth if that was possible.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes. Holy, she makes Sims Middle Earth.
Oh. I think that would do so well.
I'd be like, and now I'm going to go sweep out my hobbit hole, right? Like today, like the most mundane things, I just go and live in Hobbiton.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, yes. So before we all make our pitch to the software developer of Sims, we have had so much fun talking with you and learning more about Orphan Black. And where can we find you on social media and support the next chapter on Serial Box?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter under Helly Kennedy. So that's Helly, H-E-L-I, Kennedy, like the president. And you can find the book series at serialbox.com. And it's both in a printed format that you can read on your phone or tablet and an audiobook format. So if you go and purchase the series, you get access to both. And you get access to all 10 episodes, which will finish coming out. I think the last one comes out in December.
Perfect. Awesome. And also, I think we failed to mention this, but it's one of, I think, the biggest draws for us of the series was it's narrated by Tatiana Maslany.
Oh my God. Yeah, we didn't even talk about Tat. Yeah, go and listen to it. Tat plays clones. Yeah. Oh my God, I can't.
It truly is the next chapter.
Yeah, it truly is. She brings back all of your classic characters like Cosima and Allison and maybe Helena. Maybe.
So yeah, everyone, check it out.
And play some new ones too, some new interesting people that we haven't seen yet.
All right, so if that doesn't convince you, then I don't know what will. And if you enjoyed this episode with Helly as much as we did, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. You can tune into it on most major podcatchers.
Thanks so much. Fun. It was super fun.
Yay! We're always happy to hear that. Our theme song is The California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attributions 4.0 International License.